And we'll go to the second case for argument, Carolina Casualty versus the State of Dmitry Karpov, number 081163. Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Ron. Stuart Scott from the Spangenberg Law Firm on behalf of Margarita Karpov. Your Honors, this case arises out of a tractor-trailer collision involving five other motor vehicles where the tractor-trailer rear-ended, plowed into, essentially, the back of five other vehicles at a construction zone, resulting in the deaths of four people and serious injuries to one other. I represent, and my firm represents, one of the decedents, Mr. Karpov, and his wife, Margarita Karpov, who was seriously injured in the accident. The Karpovs, in a counterclaim, filed a deck action against Carolina Casualty, requesting that it be declared that under the Carolina Casualty policy that there be $750,000 per each judgment of coverage made available pursuant to the Motor Carrier Act of 1980.
One thing I'm curious about is because Carolina Casualty paid its policy limit of $1 million in court, I did read in there someplace where a good bit of that, was that distributed to your client?
It was distributed to the estate of Dmitry Karpov.
Yeah, and that with all these claims against that $1 million as it stands, was there some other resolution? Because that's the lion's share of the deposit with, and many other claimants.
You're right, Your Honor. The lion's share of that $1 million went to satisfy the claim of the estate of Dmitry Karpov. The remaining $250,000 was dispersed among the remaining claims for the other estates and for the vast amount of property damage that occurred, which has left Margarita Karpov basically without a recovery. There's a separate claim in an underlying claim against Net Trucking, which is the insured in this case, but it's unlikely or quite likely that there will be minimal or no recovery against those assets.
Well, again, a curious question I have is, were there umbrella policies on this?
No, the $1 million was a single policy. That was it.
Wow. Okay.
All right. The Motor Carrier Act requires financial responsibility upon the motor carriers that are registered by the Secretary of Transportation. In Section 31139 of the Motor Carrier Act, it prescribed a minimum financial responsibility limit of $750,000. Interestingly, though, in that section, Congress did not describe or explain how that minimum was to be applied. It didn't describe it to be applied per accident or per claim or as an aggregate limit. But later in the Act, under 13906, it defines the basis upon which that minimum financial responsibility is to be applied. And it says, and I'm quoting from the statute, each final judgment for the injury or death of an individual. Congress chose that this minimum financial responsibility should be applied on a per judgment basis. Per judgment is a very specific.
Not to exceed the deposit, though, didn't it? Say, go on.
That's right. Each individual judgment not exceeding the bond or the insurance amount. But that does not in any way turn that term or that section of the statute into an occurrence limits or an aggregate limits. It simply says that it shall not exceed the financial responsibility limit of $750,000 for each judgment.
Now, is that directed at the trucking company or the insurance company?
That particular section of the statute is directed to the motor carrier. There is another section, which I'm about to get to, in the Motor Carrier Act that specifically provides that the Secretary of Transportation shall devise a form, an endorsement, that will be attached to every single motor carrier policy that provides at least the minimum financial responsibility in that form of the endorsement. So what we have is Congress, and whether we want to call that regulating the motor carrier insurance industry or not, I think is splitting hairs. What Congress has done is created financial responsibility on the motor carriers, but they weren't satisfied just to let the motor carriers handle it on their own. Congress, within the same statute, then directs the Secretary of Transportation to come up with an endorsement that will be part of every insurance policy of every motor carrier that's registered by the Secretary, and requires that those minimal financial responsibilities be placed in the endorsement, regardless of what the policy says.
But all those are based on some sort of premium, which is why I alluded to the fact that, you know, many trucking companies and others will have layers on up of umbrella insurance, that sort of thing. And it would seem that if you're looking at the policy itself, there's a premium for a certain amount of risk. And I think the risk you're saying, it's basically open-ended.
Not open-ended.
It's not open-ended to everybody on the highway, but certainly everybody in the chain reaction accident that we had here.
Well, it would be limited based, let's use this policy as an example. You have to look at both the policy and the endorsement, because the endorsement is part, the MCS 90 endorsement, which is what the Secretary of Transportation prescribed, is part of this policy. And so under Congress's scheme, financial responsibility scheme, it would not be open-ended financial responsibility placed on the insurance company. It would be limited to $750,000 per judgment. So, you know, for instance, in this case where you have four deaths and one serious injury, it quite possibly each judgment would result in a verdict or a judgment in excess of $750,000.
Well, it's open-ended as to the occurrence, though, right?
It's open-ended as to the occurrence, as Congress apparently intended, based upon the language it used in the statute.
Of course, there are numerous court decisions against you. Haven't they created settled expectations and an underwriting approach here? And would we be upsetting the whole scheme if we supported your position?
I anticipated you asking that question. I'm not quite sure I agree that there are a lot of decisions against us. There is one decision of the Fourth Circuit, which is the Ham case, which I'll...
Well, everybody follows that, right?
Well, I don't know if everyone follows it. Everyone probably also followed the odometer statute that this court invalidated in the Dearson decision, too. But upsetting the apple cart, you know, we can't ignore congressional intent and what Congress wanted to be done under this statute because of fear of upsetting the apple cart. Another way of looking at this is that the insurance industry has essentially had a free ride for the last 20 years because they haven't been held responsible to pay what Congress intended them to pay, because we have to look to Congress to balance the economics and the ramifications of requiring, first of all, the financial responsibility is on the motor carrier. When the motor carrier is financially irresponsible, Congress has now looked to how do we allocate the risk and financial ramification to the innocent motoring public versus the insurance carrier. And Congress has balanced that by saying we're going to provide at least a minimum per judgment of $750,000. And who is in the best position to handle that risk? The person who's driving down the Indiana Turnpike and happens to be in the wrong lane and gets plowed over by a tractor trailer? Or the insurance company that has a direct relationship with its insured, who can make sure that the motor carrier has either appropriate assets or can set aside a reserve fund so that in the event the insurance company does have to pay more than the policy requires, they have recourse back to its insured under the MCS 90 to recover any excess payment that the insurance company made because of this statute. So this, what we're not talking about here is just a normal auto policy as we think about it. This is a public liability endorsement, and it doesn't change the relationship and the legal responsibilities vis-a-vis the motor carrier and the insurance company. The insurance company can still go back and recover against its insured any excess payments that it's made in excess of what the policy actually called for.
Well, there are policies that have uninsured motorists, for example, and other things, and all those have a premium. That's what I keep focusing on here, is that there's when you talk about upsetting the apple cart or whatever, there's history, et cetera, and there's a certain amount of risk, and that's what a premium is on, we'll call it, $1 million policy. And it seems that if you have that in place, and that's what a company purchases. Now, you can say the company was underinsured because of that kind of a risk. There's lots and lots of history of trucking accidents where they cause a lot of damage, and they usually have a lot of insurance. This case, I don't know anything about this trucking company. Maybe it was one truck. I have no idea. But it does, it would really affect the actuarial determination of an insurance company, I would think.
I would think, well, as Congress has laid this out, the insurance company has the ability to properly underwrite the premiums because they know this endorsement, the MCS 90 endorsement, is going to be part of the policy.
They know that now, or will know it if we rule that way.
Well, the MCS 90 endorsement has been part of the policy since 1982. The statute has been there since 1980.
Well, I don't know the answer to this, but if do all companies that insure trucks, et cetera, anticipate this kind of exposure?
If they're insuring interstate motor carriers that are registered with the Secretary of Transportation, they must, by law, by this Motor Carrier Act, have that MCS 90 endorsement. And so, yes, they should be anticipating this. All you have to do is look at the statute and realize that the MCS 90 endorsement should require, on a per-judgment basis, at least the minimal financial requirements.
Well, the language is very obscure, it seems to me. I can't speak for anybody myself. And your opponent, of course, claims that the legislative history favors their insurance companies. I don't know whether that's correct or not or what your response to that is exactly. But if the problem in reading the endorsement or the statute is that if you emphasize judgments, that takes you in one direction. And if you emphasize the limitation as being the amount of the deposit, that leads you in another direction. So I don't know what we get out of the plain language of this statute.
While not a paragon of clarity, the statute language clearly says on a per-judgment basis. The MCS 90 endorsement...
Well, it also says it's limited by the amount of the deposit, doesn't it?
Each judgment is limited by the amount of the deposit.
Well,
but there's nothing.
Each judgment. It says the deposit language is not connected with the judgment language, I don't believe.
Well, then we might not know whether we're talking about an occurrence or whether we're talking about an aggregate policy. If it's that ambiguous, a Carolina Casualty could apparently come in and argue, well, this is an aggregate policy, and their aggregate limit $750,000, and therefore, after one accident, we pay $750,000. Every subsequent accident after that, all these separate occurrences are uninsured. And that's certainly not what Congress meant when they passed this statute to protect the public.
That's why I was curious about this, the distribution of this one. Whoever got it first in line got it, apparently. Because there, you know, you had four deaths and one serious injury. Your client is one of the serious injuries, I guess.
One of the serious injuries and one of the deaths. And the way the money was distributed was based upon looking at the tort law of the individual states where the claims came from, and there had to be obviously a negotiated allocation of the funds based upon, relatively speaking, how the percentage of allocation of the funds would have been under a separate judgment.
Okay, well, I know that is out. Record, but it just sort of stands up there as a curiosity for me.
But getting back to then the MCS 90, the Secretary of Transportation has drafted an endorsement which does not fulfill the requirements that Congress set forth in the statute. I agree, the MCS 90 says per occurrence, but there is nothing in the language of the statute that provides for per occurrence limits. The statute specifically says per judgment, and there's nothing out of that language that one could construe this to mean per occurrence. And so what we are asking the court to do is to declare that the MCS 90 language be put into conformance with the statute so that the limits are on a per-judgment basis rather than per occurrence. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Scott. My name is Bob Brown. I represent the Appalachian Carolina Casualty Insurance Company in this matter. I'd like to begin by stating Judge Springman got it right in this case on this summary judgment motion. Her opinion is consistent with the Carolina policy of insurance. It's consistent with the Motor Carrier Act. It's consistent with the MCS 90, and it's consistent with every other case that has considered this issue. Now, at first blush, the Karpoff's argument seems like it's rather novel. It's not. It's been rejected by every reported case that's considered it. And that's entirely consistent with what Judge Springman did here. There's no question regarding what the Carolina policy of insurance says. There's been no argument it's ambiguous or anything like that. It clearly states on the deck page the limits of liability are $1 million per occurrence. The terms of the trucker's coverage endorsement makes clear that the limit of $1 million applies to any single accident, regardless of the number of injured parties.
And what says that?
The trucker's coverage endorsement. The incident in this case.
To me, the language is very obscure. I don't agree with the proposition that the language is at all plain. I do agree that most, practically all the courts that have considered this matter have come out one way or the on your side, but I don't think that's obvious from the language.
I wasn't quoting, Your Honor. I was paraphrasing the insurance policy.
Paraphrasing is the whole ball game here.
I was talking about the insurance policy, Your Honor, not the statute.
Oh, the insurance policy. All right.
The insurance policy provides that.
That's a different matter.
This is the most we'll pay, regardless of the number of injured parties in a single accident. Now, the statute that all the courts have considered is 13906, and as counsel pointed out, the key portion that he's relying upon is that the security must be sufficient to pay not more than the amount of the security for each final judgment. Now, every court that's considered that, none have ever found it to be ambiguous. The first court that directly considered this issue was the Ham decision, and that court found that this means that the insurer will pay for each judgment, but the total liability will not exceed the $1 million. That was the court's interpretation of the not more than the amount of the security language. And as I indicated, no court has found that to be ambiguous. No court has found that to mean something else. Ironically, if the Karpoffs were in their home state of Ohio in the Sixth Circuit, we probably wouldn't even be here because one of the cases is from the Sixth Circuit. One of the points raised by the Karpoffs in oral argument was that somehow insurers are getting a free ride these last 26 years or so. That's absolutely untrue. The insurers have been providing the precise insurance coverage that was purchased by each of these truckers. In this particular case, it was $1 million in coverage. The applicable statute only required $750,000, but they purchased more. Carolina paid out that $1 million in coverage to all the individual claimants in this particular case. In answer to one of your earlier questions, they received money when it went to mediation. After we deposited the $1 million, the various claimants held a mediation session, and that was the agreed distribution of the money. So it wasn't a magic formula. It was what was agreeable to all the various claimants. And I suspect that some of the claimants may have had underinsured motorist coverage that would have filled the gap. if their portion of the claim wasn't receiving sufficient funds. Now, the court also inquired, you know, who is this statute apply to? And there's really no question about that. The statute applies to motor carriers. The Secretary of Transportation does not regulate in any manner insurance companies. And the MCS 90 that's been the focus of a lot of this appeal expressly states on the form itself, and this has been in effect since at least 1982, it is the, I'm quoting, it is the motor carrier's obligation to obtain the required limits of financial responsibility. It's not up to the insurance company to investigate the motor carrier, see what kind of stuff they're hauling, do they go interstate or not, and then somehow make the decision for them. Now, the trucker or their agent comes to the insurers and want, they know what their business is, they know what the statute requires them to obtain, and they in turn purchase that insurance coverage, whether it's the minimum $750 or if they want to purchase more, which in this case they did, $1 million, that is what the insurance company then provides. And Carolina was paid for $1 million in coverage. They provided $1 million in coverage. They paid it out, deposited in a court, and it was distributed pursuant to the mediation agreement. Now,
and your position is the statute has no application to the insurance company.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is a motor carrier statute regulating the motor carrier industry. It is not an insurance statute. In the appellant's brief, they
There's
cite
a prescribed endorsement, though. Doesn't that implicate the insurance company?
Only to the extent that it's incorporated into a policy. Now, when they purchase the policy and there's an MCS 90 endorsement issued, the MCS 90 endorsement is applicable. But as I just quoted, the responsibility for selecting the coverage that the trucker wants is a motor carrier. It's not the insurer. And I'm not going to cite all the different portions of the MCS 90, but I've quoted them in the brief, and all of them make clear in multiple places, at least four or five times, that this insurance applies on a per-occurrence basis. Now, Karpoffs want to argue that the Secretary of Transportation has had this thing wrong since 1982, and that simply is not the case. This MCS 90 has been in place since then. It has been attached to all these policies issued to truckers throughout these 26 years or so, and it's still in use today, and it requires a per-occurrence limit of recovery. Now, in 1995...
Suppose a trucker gets a policy for $500,000 and there's an accident with liability far exceeding that. Who pays?
Well, if there's $500,000 in coverage applicable to that accident, $500,000 is going to be paid. Now, I suspect they're going to argue that the MCS 90 endorsement somehow increases that, but
That's
it does not.
Question, yeah.
But it does not, Your Honor, because that applies to the motor carrier. It is the motor carrier's obligation to determine and obtain the required limits of financial responsibility. It is not the insurance company to somehow look over their shoulder, investigate the business of this trucker, and say, this is what you need. That responsibility is placed by regulation and by statute upon the motor carrier. Now, in 1995, the ICC Termination Act did away with the ICC and transferred the responsibility to the Department of Transportation, essentially. And
Surface Transportation Board, wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
The same membership as the ICC, as I recall. Yeah.
And what is important about that Termination Act is that Congress stated that the regulations that were previously adopted by the ICC, and those regulations include the MCS 90 because that is part of the regulations, and I'm quoting, would continue in effect according to their terms until modified, terminated, superseded, set aside, or revoked in accordance with law. Since that time, there has been no revocation. There has been no set aside. The regulations are exactly the same. At the time that Congress made this statement of its intent, the MCS 90 endorsement was available to them. In fact, it's been published since 1982. So they were aware when they're saying these regulations, including MCS 90, shall remain in effect, they essentially ratified or adopted the Secretary's regulations and interpretation of that statute. Now, the court made comments about upsetting the apple cart. I think it's going to be a little more involved than upsetting the apple cart. What the Karpoffs essentially want this court to do is throw 26 years of motor carrier law out the window. As the court noted, there's essentially unlimited open-ended liability here, just depending simply upon the number of injured claimants in a particular accident. And it's not hard to imagine a truck striking a bus, a train. In this particular case, there was a six-vehicle accident. Now, how can an insurance company attempt to underwrite and figure out a premium for something so unknown? With 100 people, it could be exposure of $75 million, and they're writing coverage to these truckers without having any reasonable basis to make that determination on the amount of an appropriate premium. So what this is going to have the effect of doing, little or no insurance companies are going to be starting to write this coverage because it's too expensive. The risk is simply too high, which will, of course, affect the motor carriers. How are they going to get insurance if no insurance company or very few are writing this coverage?
Maybe it's like flood insurance, though. You have to let the government do it, I suppose.
Well, if the government wants to come in, I guess that's fine, Your Honor. But just imagine the expense of a trucking company in purchasing insurance that would cover this open-ended liability. No trucker could afford it, which means either their truckers are going to go out of business, or perhaps even worse, they're going to start hauling stuff and being on the roads without obtaining any financial responsibility. The law has been clear for the last 26 years. If this court were to throw out the MCS 90, throw out the law limiting the coverage to essentially per occurrence basis, the trucking industry likely will come to a halt or be severely restricted, which, of course, in these economic times would really adversely affect the economy.
The other side of the coin, of course, is that a lot of injured people go uncompensated with this.
Well, that's true in any accident, Your Honor, especially if you want to contrast this with auto accidents and auto policies. No state requires any insurer of automobiles to provide open-ended per occurrence or per person limits. No, the auto liability limits that are statutorily mandated are usually very small, $25,000, for example, in Indiana. So if the Karpoffs were hit by a car in Indiana, they would have only received $25,000, assuming the person only had a minimum level of coverage. So that's another reason why it doesn't make sense that Congress would ever intend for someone to be injured by an automobile to have nominal recovery, whereas if you get hit by a truck, you win the lottery because everybody that's hurt can recover $750,000. That certainly was not the intent of either Congress or the Secretary of Transportation when these regulations were adopted. In concluding, Your Honors, Carolina Casualty did everything that it was required to do under the policy, and if anything at all was required by the Motor Carrier Act. It paid its $1 million. That was the coverage that was purchased by its insured Net Trucking. That money was paid out to all of the claimants that were injured in this single accident. Judge Springman, consistent with every other court that has considered this issue, held that our coverage was, in fact, per occurrence and limited to $1 million. And there's nothing in the appellant's brief or reply brief or any case law or other authority they've cited that would lead to another result. Thank you.
How much time?
Time is short, so I will be brief. But I can assure your honors and Carolina Casualty that if they rule in favor of my clients, they will not feel as if they've won the lottery, quite frankly. Mr. Karpoff is dead, and Margarita has very serious permanent injuries. So believe me, they didn't win the lottery, regardless of this court's decision. Here's the point. The MCS 90 endorsement was not written by a Carolina Casualty. They didn't underwrite that endorsement. The Secretary of Transportation wrote that endorsement, and had the Secretary written it the way Congress intended, then there would be $750,000 per judgment in this accident. And their concern that the law has, the MCS 90 endorsement has been out there for 25 years, that doesn't mean anything. We can't just ignore Congress's intent because economic times are bad. And this court, in another case, with regard to the Secretary of Transportation in Dearson, told the Secretary of Transportation, you wrote a regulation that was incorrect, and told the Secretary of Transportation that is no longer valid. And that had been in place for 10 years. This involved the odometer law. So to sum up, my last point is this. The Ham case is really the only case out there that is really on point. It's a 10-page opinion. One paragraph is devoted to the actual statute and how that is supposed to influence the minimal coverage issue. There's no analysis. I would ask the court to please, regardless of how they rule, please analyze the statute and interpret what Congress meant by recovery on a per judgment basis. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.